Hello again, everybody. How are you? I hope you're enjoying your meal. Oh, thank you. Right, that's good. It is my honour to introduce our guest speaker today, Mr. John Winsbury. John commenced with Gallagher Bassett in 1998 as operations manager. In 2002, John took on the GM role of Gallagher Bassett Victoria Workers' Comp Starter. 2004 saw John take on the GM National work cover. And from 2006 to 2017, he was managing director. All of these achievements culminating in John's appointment as Executive Vice President International. All up, 30 years experience within the insurance industry. John, you look far too young to have achieved all of those things in this time. Could we please make John welcome?
This is one of those fun times as a speaker where I say, how are you going, and you're all chewing food. So I won't do that. Well, happy Office Professionals Day, right? Yes. So a little bit of colour. So I've been in the insurance sector for a long, long time. Had previous role with Suncorp for 11 years prior to moving to Gallagher Bassett in 1998. And I also worked for Alexander Howden Reinsurance Brokers in London and worked for Williams Pacific Consulting out of Harvard University prior to moving to Gallagher Bassett. So I've been around the traps a bit, but been with Gallagher for 20 years. Great organisation, which is why I stay. And that's probably not something I'll touch on today, but if you want to ask questions about what I think are the keys to what I would call a bilateral relationship between the employee and the employer, I'm happy to answer those. So, Dillis and I had a conversation about what I would like to talk about today. And I guess part of my role probably since, and I'm looking at my previous EA, Claire, and my current EA, Liv, and I think since Claire, probably since about 2010, when I started to pick up Asia Pac's responsibility, that travel sort of started to commence then. So probably 9 years of being on the road as an executive has probably provided me with some insights on how you need to work together in lockstep with your office professional or EA, as I would say. And so I wanted to give some of those insights today and then how they apply, because I was the managing director of an Australian operation too, can talk how that relates at a local level. And being the effectively the COO, the operations manager, that's also another layer down where I can sort of pass commentary on what I think are some important things to consider. So I'll get into it because I've only got 20 minutes. So I'm just going to describe my last 8 weeks. So since the first day of February, my travel has taken me to Los Angeles, Las Vegas, Phoenix, back to Brisbane, then immediately after 3 days on the ground to Singapore and then Pune in India, back to Singapore, back to Brisbane for, I don't know, live 4 days, and then to Dubai, Birmingham, Leeds, Coventry, Ipswich, London, from London back to Singapore, back to Brisbane, then on the ground for 3 days, then Chicago or LA, Chicago, back from Chicago to Auckland, Dunedin, Christchurch, Queenstown, Auckland, Brisbane, and Singapore, Sydney, back here in the last 8 weeks. So trying to manage international business, and my current role is that I look after everything for Gallagher Bassett outside of North America. So that picks up LATAM, Asia Pac, Europe, and the CEOs of those various locations report to me. So a lot of the time on the ground is flag waving, right, and meeting clients. That's what I'm doing, which means that the chief client officers of the various countries tend to fill up your diary pretty quickly. Because I've been in the industry so long, I have a lot of market knowledge, so therefore it's a good sales tactic to put people in front of potential clients and prospects who know the market. So what that means is when you're on the road, you're moving, and you hit the deck I don't know, you get into London, oh, sorry, not London, because Heathrow's rubbish. If you're sending people to the UK, don't send them to London. Put them through Dubai and get them into Birmingham. It's a lot better. It takes about 2.5 hours to get from Birmingham back to London, and that's quicker than going through Heathrow customs, just for a thought. Dead space to finding dead space, or what I would call productive space, to work together as a partnership, which a good EA and a good executive are, is quite challenging when you've got those time zone differences. But I even found as the Australian CEO that it was still challenging as to find space where you could have a valuable conversation about what's coming up, what's next, what do we need to do together. Because what happens when you're busy is, and no doubt some of you are like this yourselves, when you get home from work, sometimes you don't want to talk to anyone about your day, you just want to watch telly or have a cup of tea or whatever. So when you come off that roller coaster, whether it's been a trip around Australia to all regional locations, or you've dashed into Rockhampton, Townsville, Cairns, back to Brisbane, the last thing you want to do is probably activate the brain to start making important decisions. So understanding dead space and then productive space, I think, is really important. Where am I going to get productive space? How does that executive like to work? And when is he or she more productive? So that we can have a conversation of value. Because if the first thing you're going to say to me after I hit the deck yesterday morning from Singapore at 6 a.m. is I really need to talk to you at 7 a.m, you're probably not going to get a good response. And good decisions aren't going to be made. But an executive will, depending on their level, go, well, okay, the EA's asked me for that and I am available, so I'll take that call. So what you've got is a catastrophe occurring of bad decision making because the executive's really tired, but the EA wants to tick off stuff on the list. So we don't get good decisions, I don't think, at 7 a.m. when you jump off a plane at 6 a.m. and you maybe aren't a good sleeper on an overnight flight from Singapore. Just me, right? Maybe other people are different. Maybe I'm not a real good exec, I don't know. But that's just been some of my thinking about it. How you create that is a conversation and an evolution of when there are good times to chat. Just some other kind of things about a busy executive and how they function. Sort of always need easy access to information in weird places. So what sounds counterintuitive is that for me, and I know a lot of the guys and girls I talk to that are in similar roles, having access to electronic information and printed information is really important. And I think now we tend to rush to, well, it's on your phone. Yeah, okay, it was 100 emails ago, and I'm looking at a phone standing at a hotel where I'm about to give a speech in Singapore, and it's pretty hard to scroll back. And by the way, the IT department decided that I only needed emails on my phone for 5 days, so it's gone. So understanding what the reality is for that person on the ground and how they like to function, and what access they have to Wi-Fi and that sort of thing is really important. But I just go with, if it's printed, I can't go wrong, right? And I know that's counterintuitive in a day of digital technology, but for me it works. So that's easy access to information, whatever that looks like, right? However that is. And that's dependent on the individual. A good understanding of global time differences is pretty important for international executives. But I would counter and say, if you're working with an executive that is spending a lot of time in Sydney and Melbourne in the summer, then how are you working through daylight saving, right? What's your work habits around that? And how do you deal with that? It can be as important. In that period I just mentioned, I worked for 8 weekends. So, and look, that's the deal, right? I signed up for the job, I love my job. But I see, and Liv sitting over here, Liv and Claire would know, because Claire and I work together as well. Part of an EA's role is helping that exec manage work-life balance, I think. And part of that is developing a relationship with that executive where you can understand what's coming up that's important from a personal level, whether that's just watching Game of Thrones or whether that's family engagements that might be coming up into the future. So you can help manage that. The grim reality of economic life is it's moving faster and faster. So lots of friends of mine that are in similar positions, they don't really ever stop working. I mean, you're taking emails on a Saturday. Like, for example, my Saturday mornings, I'm looking at emails that have come in overnight from Chicago, right? Because I work for an S&P 500 company that's listed on Wall Street. It was $83 on Wall Street this morning. So I know I'm going to get inquiries Saturday morning. But I also know I can take those inquiries standing on a rugby field, as long as people are managing noise and managing space and realising John has worked for the last 8 weekends. He's probably standing on a rugby field because he loves rugby. So I'm going to help filter that information so he's only looking at the 5 emails that are really important. And that might mean you have to do that Saturday morning. So it's a partnership. It's a relationship that works because, I mean, Liv wasn't working for the 8 weekends that I was. So it's kind of trying to get that balance right. And that leads me to saying about personal support. It's kind of linked, right? That personal support for the exec. And that's always a tricky one, isn't it? Because what does personal support mean? I think personal support grows over time when trust is there to understand what works for you and that executive, or indeed that team of people you might be supporting. What does that look like? For me, it's fending off Division 293 tax that I've got to sort out of my super. And I'm sitting in, I don't know, where am I, in London or somewhere? And the tax officer after me, and it's like, I know, I've got to go to my super fund and get them to pay something, and oh my God, how do I get that form? And, you know, so a good EA will be all across that. Now, that's access to personal information, right? But I'm completely comfortable because I trust Liv. And then there's all that in between. What does personal relationship look like? You know, do you understand the executive's kids? I've got 4 kids, right? They're all at uni. So, well, I've got one still at school, sorry. So they don't say hello to me when I get home, but my dogs do. It's, but do you know the birthdays? Have you blocked out time for that? Or have you warned the executive that he's just accepted a meeting in Melbourne on his son's birthday because he is an idiot and hasn't put it in his diary? That sort of stuff. And then I was kicking this around with Dillison and with Liv, and then talked about what does that translate to in terms of points of difference that you can make. And I think some of the stuff I've been talking about are called table stakes, right? It's a choice you make. I make as an executive, you make supporting that executive. You make choices about, do I want that job, right? Do I want to do that? If you've made that choice, then that kind of stuff is table stakes, right? But where can you make points of difference? It's thinking about, how do I remove stress? And what is stress? Because the stress that you put yourself under or are under is going to look different for you than it does for that individual, right? So for me, a de-stressor is when I get off at the airport in Singapore, the car's there. And I don't have to jump in the cab line, which is always 45 minutes in Singapore to get a cab. And there's a dude standing there with a sign saying, "Hello, John." That's a major de-stressor for me. When I get off the plane in Chicago, we use A1 limousines, right? Because I've got to go. And Chicago traffic is a nightmare. It's a nightmare, right? So I know, okay, I dial that number. Liv's got it in my travel pack. And he'll tell me what terminal gate I need to be at. And he'll meet me there because they don't hold signs in Chicago, right? Another de-stressor is understanding the reality of travel. So if you're traveling from Brisbane to LA and you have a connecting flight to Chicago and you think it's okay to book that executive for an hour gap between those flights, you're not removing stress. Because it's stressful to get through security, get your bag, walk probably 15 minutes, then go through another hour of security, which you can hit in LA, to then miss your flight. I'm not sure that's removing stress. So understanding the mechanics of international travel and that the flight might be delayed, and therefore maybe saying, "Hey John, I notice you've got a connection, you're getting into LA at 6 a.m. and your connection is at 7:25. Do you want to be on the 10:25 flight to be safe? Are you okay with hanging out at the American Airlines Club for 2 hours, maybe have a shower?" "Yep, I'm good with that." But travel agents won't tell you that, right? They'll just book you on the connecting flight. That stuff, that removes stress for me personally. Other people might be different. They might love the rush of running from the plane to get through security when you've been awake for 15 hours doing emails. And believe me, Wi-Fi's on flight is not a good thing. That's one. I've talked about printed documents. And then there's briefing documents that add value, that don't remove stress, but they really add value. So do you think I need suits for this meeting? Is ties required? What is the environment I'm going into? Plenty of times I've been turning up to a meeting in suits and I'm looking at prospects worth a couple of million dollars who are all sitting around in polos and jeans. It's like, I've probably got that wrong. But that sort of information, if you know it, is really important. So because you've got a bag, you've got a kit, and what am I doing here? And I've got 2 suits in the bag for a week and I've got to rotate them. and I've got to launder them somewhere and all that stuff, right? That's adding value. Understand life on the road when it's 2 a.m. for me and it's 8 a.m. for you. If you start bombing my email and I'm the guy that will respond to emergencies, I'll look at the phone at 2 a.m. And if you start bombing that phone with, oh, this is a good time at 8 a.m. to put in all the diaries entries for the next 3 days, probably not a good idea, because I'm awake at 2 a.m. looking at it going, stop bombing my phone. And you might say, turn it off, but if I need to call the global CEO at 2 a.m., I'm going to do it, right? Just something to think about. Points of difference is making life easier for execs. So think about preferred hotels. Does the corporate rules for that travel for that executive allow them to get valet service for their car parking? Because that's a de-stressor. Sometimes it doesn't. But then are they going to, you know, are they going to get better service if they stay with one hotel or one airline because they get better status? Thinking about that stuff is important. And then I always say, if your exec is going somewhere they've never been before, probably pay attention to helping them understand how they navigate through that city. If they're heading to London and never been there, you know, I know that it's far quicker to get into, don't book them a car because it's far quicker to get the Heathrow Express. I mean, you'll be in Paddington Station in 15 minutes after getting through security, after getting through immigration rather. And a lot of people book cars and the car is like 5 times the cost and takes 2 hours. But I'm at Paddington in 15 minutes and then I jump on the tube and I'm in London at E1 another 20 minutes after that. So it's a 35 minute round trip and I'm there at the hotel, happy days, right? Ready to work. So knowing that stuff's really important if they're going to a new city, and ask around. And I think that's where this network becomes important, the networks that you develop as professionals, to say, hey, you know, I've got this new job, this new thing, how do I leverage that? How do I, what works for you and what have you done before and how do you manage that stuff? Also, I want to talk for a minute about good relationships versus bad relationships. What does good look like? Good looks like trust and communication at times when people can make good decisions and have good conversations. That's what good looks like. Because there's so much difference in how executives like to work and how EAs like to work that trying to say what's a good pathway is almost, I think, futile. But it all starts with relationship and communication, I think. And that's kind of like a gimme, yeah? But a lot of people forget that. I coach rugby in the 10 minutes I have spare because I love rugby. And the first thing we say to kids is about their stance, right? How they stand. And that's always foot up, hands up to catch ball, right? But the second thing we talk about is communicate. I'm here on your left. Here I am on your left. Pass me the ball. A lot of kids don't do that. A lot of people in professional jobs don't do that either. They don't communicate when they're stressed, happy, sad. They don't put any of their left brain out there. They don't try and form a relationship with their executive of substance. And hey, that could be because that executive is not a nice person, right? I get that. You know, I understand. But having said that, I mean, building that relationship is what good looks like. And putting any other rules around that, I think, is futile, as I said earlier, because everyone's different. But what can bad look like is the opposite of that. Not talking, communicating at inappropriate times, not understanding what's important, and not making an effort to understand the business that you're in so that you can add more value. And then if you ask yourself these questions, do I own the calendar? And do I do so in a way that I'm collaborative with the balance of the business? Then that's a win, you're adding value. And I know a lot of execs try to wrestle their calendar away, but actually the EA should own it, in my view, and control it. And control access to that executive, but do it in a way that people don't feel like they're being treated poorly, which is really important. Stuff you guys probably know, right? So I'm probably saying stuff that's kind of like you're sitting there going, yeah, whatever, we know that, John. What I'm talking about is, okay, so recently a L&D manager who'd been with the organisation for a long time was feeling unloved by their manager, which is about 2 layers below me, and wanted to ask me questions. Probably inappropriate they talk to me, but I've always said to the staff, if you want to come and see me, I'm happy to talk to you. Controlling the calendar means finding a spot that works, that's appropriate for that level of priority, to then have a conversation with that individual, because you don't want them to feel like they can't access you when you said you could. Does that make sense? Yeah. So I've seen EAs block access to executives and do that as a way of controlling not only the executive but the business, and that's not good either. So If you're adding value by getting in their head, effectiveness, preempting, how do they like to work? How do they like to communicate? So how does John like to send emails? What language does he use in his emails? If I'm going to prepare drafts, because leading is creating work. I'm not very formal when I respond to my direct reports, so don't do a draft with a formal email, because I'm just going to change it and make it less formal. Right, that's what I'm going to do. So he's creating work. Just because a person thinks, well, that's how it should be responded, because that's how I've always done it, well, you're just creating work for yourself and for that executive. So learn to understand how they communicate. And are they a formal person, or are they face-to-face? Is that how they like to do it? Do they like communicating with their direct reports in the car on the way into work? That's a yes for me, because it's space I can double up and use. And therefore, how do I track that conversation if there's important action pathways out of that phone conversation? How do we have a relationship where I can ask you that? Because John's on the phone from 5 a.m. till, I don't know, 8:30, and normally doing it in a car or on a back deck with a coffee at my place. So that's a challenge, right? So it's understanding how we capture that and how does he or she like to work. Understanding what's important, learning who's annoying. The suppliers that are sending messages to me regularly saying, John, it's a really good idea if you buy my $10 million drone. I don't want to talk to that person. Okay. Maybe someone in my business does, but I don't. All right. It's not, drones are cool, right? Sure. But I don't have time to have that conversation. So filtering those emails, because you do get a lot. I mean, I do. I mean, I'm not sure if every exec does, but I do. I get a lot of what I would call cold call pitches. Need to get them and manage them a different way. Either downstream or delete them, whatever. But then that allows you then to filter and understand what's important, because I might be getting the new compliance manager from Chicago that wants to reach out and say hi, because I do a lot of corporate governance, and we think that's a spam email, and it's not. So it's understand the business. And that says, it goes to the heart of, if I'm moving at pace or you're moving at pace, be aware of the inbox and sent box. Because I might have responded to an email and then you're saying, hey, you need to respond to this email. Once again, wasted time. It's already been responded to. So where do I come back to on that? And I say, look, embrace learning. If you're in a role that's new for you, or even if you've been in the role a while, I think, what is the business I'm in here? Like, I know what my role is. I'm an EA, right? I'm an office professional. I run a team of office professionals. But what's the business that I'm in? How does that business add value to the community? How does that business make money? What are the dominant priorities of the business? What's the 3-year strategic plan? Have you asked? If you understand that, and I always encourage EAs to sit in on executive meetings, so they not just to record minutes, but to understand why we're making the decisions we're making. And you don't have to have a business degree to understand 1 + 1 = 2, right? So, although sometimes it helps, especially the way kids do maths now. But I would say to you that embracing learning around the strategic and dominant priorities of a business is a good place to start if you want to be a serious EA. And if you're not invited to strategic meetings, you should ask, I think. I mean, what can I say? No, right? I mean, I would like to be in that meeting because I'd like to understand the strategic intent of this business so I can be more effective for you as an office professional. I mean, what executive would say no to that, right? And by the way, I'll take the minutes. And capture all the action pathways. Happy days, come on in. Right? And then ask the questions afterwards. What did you mean when you said that? So I see, in terms of adding value, I see a lot. I see PAs who think they're EAs that don't try and pick up commercial acumen or business acumen. And a lot of business acumen is osmosis, right? And it's to do with how you run your household budget. But they think somehow they're divorced from that and they don't need to know that. But I'd challenge you and say you absolutely have to know that if you want to be effective. Because that way you can filter, right? That way you can point your executive into places that's important. And hey, presto, you're adding value, right? But hey, what's more important is that you can have a strategic conversation with your EA and say, listen, I'm thinking of heading down this road. I'm unsure about the risk. What do you think? That's a great place to be. Really is. I like it anyway. And then there's some stupid stuff I wanted to talk about. I say this is stupid stuff because people do stupid stuff all the time. So they send you a complex document for a senior executive to sign and there's no cover note, no briefing document, no executive summary. You think I'm going to walk through a 200-page contract? if I need to do that, why am I employing you? Right. So, and generally it's not the EA creating the document, it's the finance department, right? Here's a 200 page contract, signed there. No, I ain't doing that, right? So that's the place you can really add value, is understanding if the role that you're supporting is corporate governance heavy, make sure briefing documents are there, make sure executive summary's there, and push back hard downstream if it's not happening. And don't try and bluff it, because the executive may be on the hook, right? Because particularly board members, I sit on boards, I'm a corporate officer at Gallagher, so I can go to jail, right? So those briefing documents are really important. And if you get into the habit when you're maybe not doing some of them, then, you know, it's a habit that gets ingrained. And I know I'm running out of time. So how much time have we got left? Do you want me to get off? 2 minutes, right. I'll make 2 minutes into 10. So, and the thing I'd say there is, don't fall for the three-card trick. And the three-card trick is people pressuring you to do something you know is not right in terms of the giving of information to that executive, because they are under pressure, because they have not utilised their time appropriately. And so you fall for the three-card trick to say, this is really, really important. I know it doesn't have all the information that you normally need, but it's really, really important. That's a three-card trick. Don't fall for it. Push back. Utilise the executive to support you in pushing back. I'll give you an example. $194,000 spend above the capital authority of the Australian CEO has to come to me, right? Briefing document not there. Oh, but this is really important because it's $194,000. Really? No briefing document, no signature. So the EA says that, and they go, you don't understand, you're just an EA. That makes me really angry, right? So I'm like, sorry, I ain't signing it, and you're pretty close to getting sacked. So that stuff's really important, but I've seen people fall for the three-card trick, right? If there's a procedure and process in place, don't listen downstream when they say it's busy. Follow the procedure, follow the process, because the person you might save is that executive from going to jail. Yeah, makes sense. Because some of this stuff, it can be that way. Particularly if you think about occupational health and safety requirements, all board members, senior executives now can go to jail. And will. Right? Forgetting about solvency of businesses, I'm just talking about procedures and regulations of government that businesses have to follow. So that stuff's really important. And then I'm just going to finish off on trust, right? And I sort of alluded to it quite a few times through this. I just think it's an absolute prerequisite, and I think it's something that does develop over time. And I would say the best way to build trust is to not demand it, but actually focus on the core skills you were employed to at the start to prove credibility. I mean, I had to do that, right? Everyone has to do that. You've got to get runs on the board, battle stripes, whatever you call it. Because you're placed in a position where, you know, it's not just the executive trusting you, it's stuff like, so the bonus recommendations for all of my CEOs comes through my email and Liv sees everything in my inbox. It's a given that I trust Liv absolutely, that information is not going anywhere, right? But that's a pretty serious position of trust and pretty easy thing to gossip about, particularly if you're not getting a bonus this year, right? And they are. So I know that's a gimme, and I know you guys, you know, understand that as a prereq, but I believe it can't be said enough. But that stuff builds trust, because I just think the exec has to be able to trust the EA. It just doesn't work any other way. Right. It can't. But I've just said a couple of things. Comply and get runs on the board before you get creative. If you're in a new role, I would say get runs on the board first. In any job, to anyone, forget office professional, get runs on the board before you start getting creative. That's important. And spend more time asking questions and delivering on those answers rather than saying, this is how I like to work. I'd ask questions first. If you build credibility first, then it's, because I know this happens too, right? You can steer your exec to more efficient ways of working. If I look at a very dear mate of mine, he is terrific and he's a CEO and he is the worst at administration. And he's had three EAs that have all tried to bludgeon him into different ways of working to get better at administration, and they just have gone about it the wrong way. The best way to do it was to actually slowly, patiently steer him after building credibility to a better way of doing it. He used to print every email. I think he might still do that. He used to print every email he got that he thought was important and then try and file it. And so he'd have his EA filing stuff. It's like, dude, what are you doing? Like, wow. I say have something printed, but that's crazy, right? Eventually, he started to move. But it was like, had to be someone he trusted and was living in his world for a little while, tearing her hair out, and then gradually moved into a better space. But I saw people fail because they come in and say, dude, this is mental. And he's like, no, are you calling me mental? That's that kind of stuff. So, yeah, wow. So I just think overall, if you're looking, and maybe the Q&A will cover some of this, if you're looking to think about how do you add that value, I think realising a business is an orchestra is a good place to start, right? And so a good senior exec, a good CEO, a good C-suite will always move in partnership with his or her executive team. So building those relationships as an orchestra with all the EAs is really critical as well. And if you've got good relationships with those EAs, you'll get more done yourself. And you'll also learn how to tap into new learning, because it's different. As I look here at my international CFO, the CFO thinks differently, moves differently, has a different agenda to what I do. But we work closely together, so understanding how we work together by working closely, the two EAs working closely together, does get better outcomes. So no person's an island, right? Everything's an orchestra is key. And particularly if you're a senior office professional, you need to lead the way and lead by example in that space, right? Because the juniors coming on won't know how to do that properly. And you can really add value to their careers by just that simple thing. So Liv asked me, can I have a conference for the EAs, for all the CEOs and the senior C-suite executives? And I know a lot of organisations that would say, no, well, there's no way we're doing that. And we said, yeah, absolutely. That's a great idea. So we flew people in from New Zealand, up from Melbourne, to do that, and it's working, and we've got better communication. So that's a good thing, right? Because we make more money. Because we're $83 on the New York Stock Exchange this morning. So I'm happy to take any questions, but I think that's during the Q&A, right? Thanks, guys. I hope that helped. Maybe it didn't, but I hope it did. Good afternoon.